Hey everyone, welcome to the Behind the Scenes podcast. I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Audrey.
And on this podcast, we share the messy, honest, unfiltered, and not so curated parts of our life.
Think of this podcast as a bunch of bloopers with some truth bombs sprinkled throughout.
That's right. We're going to be taking you behind the scenes of our daily routines, our social media feeds, and what you may or may not have seen on TV.
We're going to be talking relationships, family, faith, business, basically whatever we are learning about, fighting about, or laughing about lately.
We're going to be sharing our daily life, our struggles, successes, and our roses and thorns from each week.
And we don't want this podcast to just be about us, so we're also going to go behind the scenes with some of the people who inspire us the most.
We hope this podcast feels like you're joining us for a campfire.
Come hang out. This week's episode, we are so excited because we are sitting down to interview the couple who has probably had the biggest impact on our love story and marriage to date, Chris and Jamie Herb. Jamie Herb was my college mentor, and Chris Herb was the area director for Young Life when I was in college and was a college Young Life reader. Young Life leader. Mm-hmm. And Chris and Jamie had a huge impact on my college experience. And then when I started dating Jeremy and we got engaged, we asked them if they would do our premarital counseling. And so they ended up doing our premarital counseling.
Which has had a profound
huge influence
on our lives.
Impact on our marriage. They inspired the marriage journal. They inspired so much of our book. They were huge supporters of us in our relationship leading up to our wedding day and to this very day as well. And also just huge supporters of us in the writing of A Love Letter Life and Beating 50% and all the things that we do. You've probably seen them write a few guest blogs for Beating 50. And they wrote the foreword for the marriage journal. They're amazing, amazing humans. They've got four kids. Chris is now the regional area Young Life regional director for Young Life. And they're just awesome. So we're so excited to have them on this week's episode.
Yes. So they still live down in Corvallis and we try to make it down there. I don't know, not every month, but every month or so, just to catch up, hang out and pursue that, you know, that mentor student relationship with them. And it's kind of it's a relationship that's really important. I think everyone should have some of those in their life, and they're definitely one of those for us. So, yeah, let's just get right into it, guys. This is an awesome, awesome episode. I think you're going to really enjoy it. Let us know at Behind the Scenes Podcast what your takeaways were. So, without further ado, here's our conversation with Chris and Jamie Herb. Chris and Jamie Herb, what a pleasure to have you guys finally on the podcast.
We're pumped to be here.
Yes.
Here we are.
We're so excited to have you guys finally. And it's also, I think it's just going to be so fun because we've mentioned you guys on the podcast so much and obviously in the book, and you're just a huge part of our life and story. So we're so excited to be sharing your wisdom in a very direct to listener way in this episode and just talking about all the things that you guys have really inspired us to do and be. Yeah. And so We're pumped.
And just to catch up, anyone listening that doesn't, maybe haven't heard of Chris and Jamie, A, if you read the book, you'll definitely know who they are. Or if you've been following Beating 50 for any length of time. But Chris and Jamie was Audrey's mentor in college. And then they were our premarital counselors. And then through that, they've just kind of walked with us through our marriage. And we've learned an immense amount from them. We refer to them often and wouldn't know where we would be without them. So...
That's, and you guys have probably seen Chris before because he did marry us. So if you watched our wedding, that was the guy.
You wore my ring, I think.
Your moment.
Yes, that's right. I forgot about that story.
That was a good little moment.
Tell that really quick.
Yeah. So was it Zach or I can't
Zach remember. Forgot.
I don't wanna... Someone forgot your ring and we were sitting in the barn and the processional was heading out.
Yes.
And he wanted to run back to the house and get it. And you were like, no, that's too much time. And I said, how big is your finger? And you said, I don't know. I go, does this fit? And you said, it fits. And I go, that is now your ring. Let's go.
Boom. Yeah, that was so good.
Moment.
I don't think that story's been I don't think we didn't told tell that it, story.
Or I think we maybe did after the wedding.
That's so classic somewhere. Behind the scenes wedding.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love it.
Yeah. All right. So we've kind of introduced you guys a little bit, but why don't you guys tell us who you are, where you live, and what you do?
Yep. So Chris and Jamie Herb. We live in Corvallis, Oregon. We both live. That's right. in Corvallis, Oregon. I'm the regional director for Young Life, a Christian organization that's been around for 75 years, introducing kids to Jesus, helping them grow in their faith. So I've been doing that for 22 plus years and nice. Love it. Jamie, what do you do?
Yes.
Well, basically for the last almost 18 years, we've been raising four kids, which is crazy. We almost have a 18-year-old.
He's graduating. Turns 18 1 week from today.
And it's been an awesome journey raising four kids. I also have taught elementary school for years and then took a break after Peyton had cancer. And we had a lot of health journey struggles. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. Through that, God's just led me to educate in whole food nutrition. And the last 6 years, I've partnered with the Juice Plus company and have really loved helping families, you know, flood their bodies with more plants.
Yes.
Nice. Well said.
Yes.
Cool.
So good. Love it, guys. Okay. Well, we wanted to give you guys a second. We've been doing this with all of our guests for this season. Just to tell us your guys' Sparks Note version of your love story. So how you met to speed up, fast forward to today, how you are today. And you guys have been married for how many years now? Are we at 20?
We're at 20. 20
Heck
and a half.
Yeah, I love that.
Almost 21.
So, yeah. Oh my gosh, that's nuts. Yep. So tell us how you guys met briefly. You guys can banter a little bit. Everyone kind of, you know, whenever we ask people this, there's always a slight, there's always some discrepancy between the
always,
husband.
Always.
So, yeah. You know, correct each other, yeah. Whatever. But just take a few minutes to tell us how you guys met and then lead us up to now.
Yeah. All Jamie's voice isn't great. So I'll talk and then she'll jump in because she always corrects me on the details of the story. So,
familiar.
Yeah. So back in, it was 1996.
That sounds so old.
I know. I had a pager. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Jamie was working at a Christian camp called Camp Harlow over the summer. They hired Young Life, some Young Life folks to come in and run their high school camps. The camp runs all summer, all sorts of different kids.
Like ages 5 through
high school. And they hired Young Life staff to come in to run the camp. And so I was there. She was a counselor. I noticed her. She noticed me leading the electric slide.
That was like my defining moment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I could dance.
What? Just the energy, Jamie, or what was it? Like, why?
One, I love dancing personally, but I just love to watch him from a distance, you know, lead. Uh-huh. I knew I always wanted a leader, you know, in a relationship. And I just got to watch him lead and pray. And then he just led the electric slide. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is not good. Like, yeah. I'm attracted to this guy. I don't even know him.
That is so funny.
That's awesome. So, I mean, the camp went on and I was in a serving role. She was in a serving role. Obviously I, you know, was interested, but, you know, didn't feel like it was appropriate for me to be pursuing someone when we were both serving it at this camp. And so I basically kind of said to myself and to the Lord, okay, you know, on the last day, if I see her, you know,
you forgot Matt introduced us.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, one of my Young Life guys came out and, he was like, oh, you know, are there any cute girls that you like here? And I'm like, yeah, there's this one, but like they all had camp names. And so I didn't know her real name. And so we had to go to this wall of like pictures and, this one, he goes, oh, I know her. That's Jamie, you know, Shepke. She goes to our church. And so anyway, so he knew her. And so, the camp ended and I thought, okay, when things are over, I'll approach her and maybe ask her for a phone number, ask her out for a date or whatever. camp ends, you know, kids are leaving. And what I didn't know is she had to leave camp a day early to be in a friend's wedding. And so she was gone. She wasn't there. So I thought, all right, oh, no. Maybe it wasn't supposed to be. Well, you know, 2 days later, I'm sitting in church and I see her. She's sitting in church. And so I thought, oh my gosh. So Matt is with me and he goes over and I'm supposed to take a bunch of Young Life kids, including Matt, out to breakfast after church. And Matt goes over and invites her out to breakfast with us because he knows I kind of like her.
And like five high school guys.
Yeah, five high school guys.
Yes.
So we, you know, so it's this awkward, her, me, and then five high school kids, you know, kind of out for pancakes.
Yeah, funny.
And
OPH.
Original Pancake House. And so
So
after that, I take her to her sister's soccer game. And it's all teed up for me to ask her out. And for something in just kind of in my spirit says, you need to wait. And so I didn't ask her out.
It was really awkward. He was just like, okay, well, see you later. And I was okay, that was.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Weird.
She was not happy with me. So, so then 3 months go by. And she goes back to school. She's, you know, in her junior year. I'm just out of college. But then Christmas time, me and a friend go out to a movie. And two guys go out to a romantic comedy together.
Yeah.
We both get out of the movie and we're like, oh, we're losers. We need girlfriends. And so actually he went and called who is now his wife. And I called Jamie.
Funny.
We went on
a different stirring of the spirit there.
Yeah. Seriously. We went on a date and, it was funny at the end of the date. I was like, man, that was awesome. I mean, I had so much fun. And I said, hey, here's my phone number.
No,
I said,
your pager number.
I know. Let's then I clear. Said, oh then I said, here's my pager it. Number.
My mom doesn't even have this.
Yeah. I said, my mom doesn't even have this number. I said, you know, give me a call. It'll be great. And I think kind of a defining moment in our story is, you know, when I said that, she said, well, that's great. She said, but I'm not going to call you. And I was like, what? You know? And she says, no.
That is
she
so goes, good.
Know, if you want to hang out, if you want to, you know, build anything here, you can call me.
Yeah. And, Jamie, heard that.
Yeah, she said I need an initiator.
Pulls in your court. Someone,
you know, to pursue me. And I was like, all right, game on. But it almost kind of like clicked with like, okay, the ball's in my court. I need to be the one initiating. Because honestly, I'd never had that before in a relationship. So
yeah, all the girls liked Chris. So
no,
you know.
Stop it. So
it's okay, Jamie. I can relate.
Yeah, I didn't have the long flowing hair like Jeremy has.
Right.
So from there, then we dated, and it was intentional. It was long. It was long distance. I was in Eugene. She was about an hour and a half north.
How long did you date?
We dated for 9 months.
We did it for 8 months, got engaged, and then this is the details.
Yeah.
And then,
9 months, 8 months.
And then we're engaged for 9 months.
Yeah. So it was
awesome.
That's good. Yeah.
It was, I mean, it was pretty short dating, but it was intentional. Yeah. It was, you know, being long distance forced us to be intentional. Yes. There were some healthy built in boundaries. You know, we had to plan it. I had to drive up. We
didn't have FaceTime or cell phones. It was like, if you wanted to talk on the phone, you had to plan it, you know, like,
hey, I'll call you tomorrow at this time.
Or house.
Right.
I love that. I would say the same thing. Like long distance was such an interesting, as hard as it was such an interesting teacher.
We always say it taught us to over communicate. Because you have to do that. You can't, you don't hear tone of voice. I mean, for you guys it's different, but like for us, you know, a lot of our long distance relationship was texting. So you didn't even hear tone of voice sometimes because we're so busy and in class and, you know, almost like the spontaneity of being able to call each other all the time because we had cell phones. It sort of like you guys were forced into that intentionality, whereas we had to actually seek it out and like, you know, so it's just, it's interesting. But I love that you guys. So then, get married, then what?
Yep.
have a bunch of kids.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. So yeah. So this is the long version. Well, yeah. So we dated for the 9 months, you know, got engaged September 6th, 1997. And then we're engaged till June and got married June 20th, 1998.
So. And then I think a unique part of our story too is, excuse my voice, is when we got married, this was something that we were really intentional about. Chris was starting a new role as the area director in Salem, and he was kind of taking over the shoes of, you know, we kind of joke, the Michael Jordan of Young Life at that time, you know? And, I knew it was a big job. It was going to be my first year of teaching as well. And we knew that if we both went into those roles, we were really going to be going in opposite directions. And so even though it didn't make sense on paper, like financially, like we made the decision for me to just substitute teach so that I could be more of a supportive role and be more involved in life and not, be going a different direction. So it didn't, you know, we got some interesting, like, you know, like, well, wait, what are you doing? Like, this is the time you're young. You're, you know,
like,
you should be, you know, carving away at your school loans and whatnot. But it really was an intentional decision because we wanted our marriage to be something that, you know, the first 2 years, you know, you're setting patterns for a lifetime, you know, they're harder to break after the first 2 years. And so we wanted to be intentional of making time for each other, but also support each other. And Chris's love language, you know, is acts of service. And I knew enough about myself that there wouldn't have been a lot of serving in my first year of teaching in that partnership role. So
That's really good. Very good. That.
You guys, I mean, and maybe this isn't fit right here. And I know, like, I definitely want to talk about this at some point in the podcast. But Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but you had the nine or whatever. Was that before you guys got married or was that on your honeymoon? When did that come to be?
Yeah.
Was that when you were engaged?
That came to be really as a, hey, how do I want to ask Jamie to marry me? That was worked into our engagement story. Where it came from me. And then as we, you know,
Can you tell that real quick?
Tell the story. Cause this is really good.
Basically I created our engagement day around the things that I envisioned our marriage being about. So rather than kind of do this, you know, wildly romantic, you know, type of a thing, I thought I want the day to reflect what our marriage vision will be someday. And so We did nine things that day. We invested in our family by going out to breakfast. We invested in our friendships.
So
we did ministry together. You know, we had fun. We served one another. We read God's word. We prayed together. We experienced an element of romance. We shared a meal together. So those are kind of the nine things that we experienced throughout the day. And she didn't know it at the time, but, you know.
Yeah, because it just seemed like a normal date. Like,
right.
You know, like he's like, hey, meet me in Salem at my parents. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to go out to breakfast with them and, you know, pack something, you know, nice to wear to dinner. And, you know, we're just going to do some fun things. And so I was like, oh, okay, great. Yeah,
we went to a South Eugene soccer game. You know,
that
we're
was
a bunch
the ministry
of the,
together.
We're a bunch of the guys, right? We went for a run on the river. You know, but then as it got closer towards the end, we were in our church, you know, I opened
it
up.
No, he's like, oh, I left my Bible, you know, and I think we need to go get it. And we're at, you know, Faith Center in Eugene. It's a huge church. And he's like going around trying to open the door on like a Saturday. And I'm like, this is not, I'm not feeling real safe about this. I don't think, you know, he's like, no, it's fine. You know, I'm sure there's a door open and oh my gosh, it was crazy. So as soon as we got into the church, I knew something was, I'm like, whoa, there's no something's doors up. Open in the church.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we experienced elements of all those things in the day and, you know, and then at the end, like when I asked her to marry me, I said, hey, you know, you might have thought today was just a normal day, but there's things that we experienced throughout today that are significant to what I want our marriage to be or what I want our relationship to be about, as I think is what I said.
Yeah.
You know, and I explained what we did around family, friends, ministry, fun. I go, we experienced all these things today. And then I said, you know, we read God's word together. We prayed together. We wrote notes to our friends together.
Yeah, we sent postcards to like.
I love that.
Yeah, right. It was super.
You know, I said, but you know, I also want us to be about, you know, serving one another. And so then I washed your feet. And at the end of that, I said, you know, and I also want us to, you know, have an element of romance. And then we danced to a song. And then that's when I got down on a knee.
He has this like remote control, and down at the podium of where, you know, the pastor, like kind of like where we first really, you know, met.
Saw each other, right?
At the church. And, you know, we're here by ourselves, and he presses this remote, and on comes the song True Companion which I just love. And, you know, he grabs my hand and we start dancing. And I was just, I'm like a ball. I'm like a mess. I'm like, why? And the cool part was he had like, he knew that I would be. So he had like a box of tissues off to the side.
Oh my gosh. Chris, that you said, you know, well, I didn't want to do some wildly romantic thing. I wanted to be intentional, but Chris, this is wildly romantic.
I know.
Like, this is romantic, yeah, you know, totally, like it's totally the element. And I know that that's something that's an element of one of your nine things, right? Isn't it?
Yeah. Romance.
Yeah. Well,
romance, one of the nine
before,
things.
Before we get into that, like, Chris, that's super intentional and a great way to set up and prepare for your marriage. And Aj and I, we've learned so, so much from you guys. The whole chapter in our book, Preparing for Our Marriage, is
inspired
in large part inspired by things
you helped
either
us do
through
that.
Conversation or through our premarital counseling with you guys and just things we've learned from you and stuff. So if there's like a thing or three that you would, you know, want to tell folks who are listening about how to prepare for their marriage, or just a way to encourage them, maybe an idea. I mean, you just gave some pretty good ideas, but is there a thing or two?
Or discussions to have.
And this
before...
isn't just for pre-marriage too. I feel like a lot of these concepts, if you know, you might hear them for the first time and you're 6, 7, 8 years married, it'd still be a good thing to do.
Right.
You know?
Right. But, I would say, you know, I almost made those nine things naively, right? Just thinking, oh, this is what, you know, we want them to be about. But then they became, you know, our due north. They became something that we pointed to and thought, gosh, we really believe in these things. And so I'd say in preparation for marriage, you know, I would say two things, you know, and then I'll let Jamie jump in. I would say number one, you know, kind of take inventory, you know, seek to understand, seek to be a student of yourself. I would say it would be a huge journey to go on. So a look inward, if you will, and understanding who you are, how you operate. You know, if you have a good sense of self-awareness and are willing to take that personal journey, whether that means you go get therapy or you have a mentor or you've got other people in your life speaking into you, your gifts, your blind sides. I think taking that journey inward personally is huge, because when you get into kind of the context or the throes of marriage, all of the unhealth, all of those blind sides, all of, you know, maybe some of your, you know, historical, you know, baggage, if you will, it bubbles to the surface very quickly. And if you're not aware of it, then you're operating out of unhealth. And so I'd say number one, you know, journey inward. I'd say number two, kind of together as a couple, then journey forward, journey outward, meaning, you know, asking yourself, gosh, what do we want to be about? What is our vision? You know, what is our mission as a couple? What are our values? What do we see happening in our relationship 3 years down the road, 5 years down the road? Shoot, you know, what's our bucket list as a couple?
I love that.
So kind of, I would say that the two biggest things I would say would be inward journey, you know, personally. And then, you know, inward journey also, you know, as a couple, you know, as Jamie's taking her inward journey, as I'm taking my inward journey, you know, we're sharing that in the context of our relationship. I become a student of myself, but, you know, I've invited Jamie into that process as well. Jamie becomes a student of me and helps me see things, and I help her see things. And so it's kind of this, you know, I'm, you know, more self-aware of me. Jamie's engaged in that process. I'm engaged in her process. But then together, we're looking forward and saying, okay, Lord, you know, where do you want to take us? What do you want us to be about? Where do you want us to go? And just identifying some real simple, it's not rocket science, you know, mm-hmm. but real simple things that are kind of our rails, if you will, that guide us and lead us and keep us on track to head towards, you know, who we believe as individuals, as a couple, you know, the Lord wants us to be.
So good.
That's so good.
Yes. Yes. Love that. Yes. And you guys,
so
we quote you guys in this often, but Jeremy and I are constantly saying, like, you know, we always want to be students of ourselves, but also each other. Mm-hmm. And that whenever you guys listeners hear us saying that, that comes from Chris and Jamie, because they're the ones that really impress that on us. And I think that's why Jeremy and I love things like the Enneagram and love languages and those things, because they help us become better students of ourselves so that we can love each other better and in more intentional, creative, specific ways. So,
yeah. And then, so these things turned into, you know, your guys's 9 pillars that you ended up writing down and you have them printed in your home.
That's a 12.
Oh, that's the 12. Well, okay, the 9 and
they're both. There's one for our family and then one for our marriage. Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's good. And then Jamie, like, this obviously for you was you were obviously a part of this whole process, but also having someone that was intentional in doing this and leading in this mm-hmm. way, kind of like, how helpful has that been? Like, how just
I think if anyone's listening, I feel like that's such an important piece. If you're waiting for someone to come along, that you keep your standards high for waiting for someone to be a leader in that relationship, that it's worth waiting for. And just personally, like, there's things that I prayed about for years wanting in a spouse. And honestly, there's different times where people are like, man, you know, maybe you need to lower the bar, Jamie, a little bit. I wanted someone that was creative and intentional, because that's really like kind of how I live my life with friendships. And I got to watch Chris and how he is intentional in other relationships, you know, as we were dating, like how he valued his Young Life leaders, you know, how he cared for his parents, his sister. It wasn't just me. You know, like it, and he was extravagant in romance and still is, to be honest, but he was just intentional in relationships, period. And so to have that as a spouse is like so encouraging, and to know that he is always wanting to be sharpened, you know, personally, like he's going to the Word, he's going to wise counsel and trying to continue to grow inward, but also, you know, wanting to bring that into our relationship and lead our family and lead our kids. And, you know, he's just
so good.
Done such an amazing job of, he's not perfect, you know, of course.
I don't play guitar.
Close. He's
on her list.
Yeah.
And I haven't learned. So there you go.
So that's so good and such an encouragement to hear. And I kind of want to turn a question to you, Chris, like, because I hear a lot of girls, a lot of women out there kind of saying, oh, like, yeah, that sounds awesome, but there's less and less. And we say, like, no, that's a lie. They are out there. There are men that want to be intentional and whatnot. But being someone that works with youth kind of so much and seeing a lot of these, like, startup relationships, what would you guys say maybe collectively is the biggest threat to love stories in the world we live in today? Like, what's kind of the one thing you see halting, marring, or preventing, you know, a love letter life, if you will? But it's kind of a pop question there. But what I'm kind of getting at is, like, Aj and I, we think cell phones and social media is by and large putting an end to more love stories than we care to count. Just curious.
No, that's a good question. I think at the end of the day for me, I mean, gosh, it's so hard to say what's the one thing.
I know.
But that being said, I would say believing the lie that our culture or others dictate our identity versus, you know, who God says we are. And I know that might, you know, sound a little bit cliche, but, you know, yeah, our culture through the vehicle of cell phones and technology or, but I think, you know, when we really, when we really take inventory on, you know, this next generation coming up that, you know, gosh, you know, it's my role, Jamie's role to help, you know, it's our responsibility to help usher that, you know, generation into adulthood. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, what voices, what narratives are we choosing to believe is true? And is it the narrative of, you know, kind of our culture and the world and what others say about us that, you know, it's about, you know, what we do, it's about what we have, it's about what people say about us. Is that who we are? Or, you know, is it the God of the universe? And so what voice is going to win out? And so creating space and time for the important, you know, voices to be the ones that we hear and that we believe and that we live into. And so I think, yes, I think choosing to listen to those other voices, you know, regardless of the avenue upon which they come through, I think that is the biggest threat. And because then if we listen to those voices enough, we tend to believe those voices, and then that's what we live out of. That becomes our reality.
That's really, and I feel like just in the past, I don't remember when it was, sometime in the past year though, just I was journaling about, you know, social media and just the effect that it's having on our lives in general, not just our marriages. But one thing that I felt like the Lord really spoke to me was, you know, it's okay to let people in your sphere, your community, or even in the online space affirm the things that you're doing, but they should never validate the things you're doing.
Yeah.
Right.
And so like, for me, that was like underlined in journal because that's I felt really like good. That so was something, I feel like that's something that so many people wrestle with is like, they want to be validated.
Yeah.
But, and it's okay to be affirmed and like, you know, for people to point out the fruit in your life and then you to, you know, recognize your giftings and recognize what you're good at and your strengths and whatever. But when you make it about validation,
that's
it's
so
just
good.
Anyways, that's kind of a tangent.
Affirmation
thought,
does not
going
equal
off of that, Jared's question about just, you know, threat. What's the biggest threat to your love story? I know you guys have done so many things, brilliant, creative, intentional ideas of ways that you guys have put boundaries around your marriage, protected your marriage, you know, implemented helpful rhythms in your marriage to protect it. Mm-hmm. And of course, the obvious one is the marriage journal. And I definitely want us to talk about that because that's been obviously one of the biggest things for us. And you guys were the ones that inspired that. So share that in your answer somewhere, but also share, you know, some of the other things, your guys' daily prayer calls and your, like all those things. What are some of your favorite helpful rhythms and boundaries that have helped to protect your marriage in up to 20 years, you know?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, almost naively when we got married, you know, I in Young Life, it's a relational ministry. So I'm out, you know, investing in relationships, you know, all day long. And, you know, at one point I said to Jamie, you know, if you look at Jesus, the three people he invested in the most were Peter, James, and John. And then, but, you know, even of those three, it was Peter, you know? Mm-hmm. And I said to Jamie early on, I said, hey, you know, I invest in a lot of relationships. I don't want to come home at the end of the day and have you just get my leftovers, you know, relationally. I said, I want you to be like Peter. You know, I want you to be,
you're my Peter.
Number one.
Romantic language there.
And I didn't really realize what that would cost, you know, early on, but I think just by saying that, by that being our mantra, like you are the Peter, you know, for me in terms of relationally, that you're going to get my best. And so by having that kind of out there, you know, knowing that, I'm never going to be perfect in it, but, I think for us to agree on that together, for her to know that was my intention, that was my hope, that was my desire. I think that was number one. That was huge. That was a big statement. Mm. Again, made naively early in marriage, not knowing what that would cost.
Right.
But I think that was big, saying, hey, you know, kind of making that agreement, you know, apart from apart from my relationship with God, you are the most important human being on this planet. And, right. and you're going to see that in, yeah. in how I live and the choices I make. So I think that would be one, just where we started with that.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, he would say things like, you know, Chris is more bold with his words, which is a good thing. But he said, I still remember the day he said, you know, Jamie, we were kind of, I can't remember if it was like a conflict or, you know, something like had happened. And he said, Jamie, look, I will fail as an area director in your life before I'll fail you as a husband. And it was like, okay, I know where I stand in the priority list, even though, you know, again, he's in relationships all day long. And sometimes I think as a spouse, you know, and in ministry, you want to encourage that. But sometimes you need the red phone. You know, we have some friends that, you know, have been our mentors that, you know, had said, you know, your spouse needs to know that if they pick up the red phone, you know, kind of like in the presidential, you know, the old school movies.
Yeah.
You know, kind of the hotline. It's like, if you need to pick up the red phone and they call, you're going to answer. And you might need to drop whatever you're doing. And you're not going to use the red phone like every day, you know?
Right. It's going to be. Don't be that person.
Right.
yeah.
So I think having that set, knowing that we could call or have that backing of when we did need each other, we could. And, you know, our rhythms when we started, we had date nights even before we got married. And that continued in our early years of marriage. And people would look at us, I think kind of, you know.
This is before we had kids.
This is before we had kids. They're like, why do you have a date night? Because, you know, like you see each other every night. And we'd be like, yeah, but it's different. Like we take turns planning it. You know, we're like, we still wanted romance to be a part, you know, just because, you know, you can be together every night and still not really be together, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So having a weekly date night, like it was Wednesday. We had friends that would call us. We kind of trained people like it's like, oh, yeah, well. I know you can't get together on Wednesday, but you know, how about Thursday or Friday? So for literally 16 years, we had a Wednesday date night. Like, I mean, bar, you know, different situations, we really were consistent with that.
Yeah,
me,
I wouldn't miss it.
Me being a quality time person, I needed that because we are really relational people. So that's been a good, huge rhythm.
That's so good.
Yeah. I mean,
and not alone is a testament to you guys. It's just amazing. Well,
and what we found is we invested in those rhythms early. Again, you know, Jamie saying that the first 2 years, really good habits, bad habits are formed and they're hard to break after those first 2 years. But as we invested in some of those healthy rhythms, whether that was, you know, knowing that, you know, she was my other than God, my number one, having a fixed date night, you know, we made a commitment that every year we were going to go on a vacation together for a week, just her and I. I don't think we've missed that.
Except for
maybe one or two years
we've
missed
it. Two times when the kids, babies, we had babies.
Yeah.
But other than that, we've committed to that every year.
That's been good every year.
Four kids, you guys. And Chris is in ministry and they go on vacation every year for a week.
I mean, you could Yeah, you could do it. You can make it happen.
You can make it happen. And, you know, there are times financially where it was like,
might not have made sense.
You know, it's like we could choose different
stretch.
And it was like, no, we needed this time. And it's such a reset. And it's just been such a holy, you know, like refining. Yeah. Season. And before the marriage journal, it was finally time for us to like have uninterrupted time together. You can't escape conflict or like unresolved things that you've pushed down when you're with each other 24/7 for 7 days.
So. I mean, so and it's, again, it's not rocket science, you know, but that old thing, common sense isn't always common practice. I mean, for us, what's worked has been a daily noon 3-minute check-in phone call, a weekly date night, our weekly marriage journal, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and then an annual vacation. I mean, it's just four things, you know. But just by doing those all those are important but not urgent, right? They create such value and add such value to our lives. But like day to day, week to week, month to month, they're not like these things screaming at us. But if we don't invest in those things and make deposits in those areas, we know you know, very soon we'll be in crisis mode. And so they've put us in more of a preventative posture versus a reactive, you know, posture.
Mm-hmm. And I, you know, the marriage journal came out of a desperate time. It was, you know, we were on vacation and it was after we'd had Lauren. She had come with us.
Our third kid.
So she was the only baby that traveled with us on our vacation. But she was 7 months still nursing. And, you know, we were missing each other. Like big things were happening. Like someone would, you know, get pregnant and we wouldn't have time or space to even talk about it. We were missing details. Mm-hmm. Chris didn't feel like he was a great spiritual leader at that time. You know, we had just come out of Peyton's cancer and like, you know, we're coming out of some survival mode, things. And I grew up with a dad who had Christian bookstores. And so the love and marriage section was like my favorite section. And so I read all the books and I loved the cheesy, you know, like devotionals. And Chris was like, not having that.
Cheesy.
And so he's like, we've got to find a rhythm that we can do that's manageable. You know, I might have these grandiose ideas, but it wasn't practical. And we couldn't be consistent at it. You know, that's what we had wrestled with. We couldn't find the consistency. And so he's like, what if we just checked in and asked, you know, 5 questions. So I literally grabbed a piece of paper as we're driving, you know, home from Canada. And he started saying, you know, these questions.
And really the way the questions formed is we said, okay, what's the itch? What do we need? What do we really need? Mm-hmm. And we thought, okay, we need to connect emotionally. Yeah. You know, we need to kind of know how we're doing. We need to connect spiritually, you know, how we can pray for each other. We need to know kind of what the other person needs or how we can serve one another. And we need to, if there's anything in the dark, we need to bring it in the light. Those are really the 4 reasons that we felt like, if we could do that every week, you know, if we could create space for that every week, to connect emotionally, to connect spiritually, to communicate our needs and, you know, really serve one another and then bring anything that's in the dark out into the light. Meaning if I needed to confess anything, that was the space. If I was hurt or Jamie was hurt and we haven't shared it yet, that was the space. And so that's where the 5 questions really came out of that. And then we knew that, you know, gosh, you know, 2 biggest sources of stress in marriages are physical intimacy and finances. Mm-hmm. We felt like we could cover that once a month. And so we added those 2 questions on a month-to-month basis. And we just found creating space and time for that, it was such a great investment. And then led to all these wonderful conversations.
Yes. And it kept short accounts. And it forced us, because both Chris and I are, you know, people pleasers to some degree, and we don't really love conflict. And so you kind of like push it down. And then you know, you react to something and you're like, whoa, hey, what's that? You know, I just said, could you do the dishes? And so it forced time and space to be like, hey, we're setting the standard of like, if there's something that we haven't been able to resolve during the week, like, hey, when you said that, or I know you're tired or exhausted or nursing a kid or you're not getting sleep or, you know, like stressful things at work. Like the journal gave us accountability to like, nope, we're sharing it. You know, we're ready to hear it and we're ready to share it.
It made us accountable to the process of the journal versus me being accountable to Jamie wanting to, you know, confront me on her timeline. We knew that by having the journal there that it just kind of created this third level of accountability where like, okay, I'm ready to hear it. I'm ready to share because we're doing the journal time, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And for us, you guys, our listeners know, we talk about the marriage journal all the time. So now for your listeners listening, like this is where the idea came from. This is why Jer and I fell in love with it, is because Chris and Amy, as they're telling us about this in premarital counseling, are like lighting up going, we have to do this.
Yeah.
And for us, you know, we've only been doing it for 5 years, but Chris and Jamie have been doing it how many years now?
13.
13. 13. 13. 7 months.
Yeah. 14. Okay. 14. Yeah.
14
years. So Chris and Jamie, four kids, 14 years. They've been doing this. So don't do it because we do it. Do it because they do it. Yeah. It's clearly working. You know, it's just like so simple and so amazing.
This is why it's so good. It's attainable. It's simple. Yep. It's not overcomplicated. Yep. It's not some 30-day devotional that's supposed to fix everything.
It's not cliche.
It's somewhat of a mundane routine that has profound implications. And we always say it pushes back against the tide of busy and it's and the tyranny of the urgent. And it says, nope, once a week, we are going to resist roommate syndrome and we're going to connect emotionally, physically, intimately.
Hopefully more than once a week, but you know.
But at least once a week, this needs to be happening, has to get everything out, and it provides that time and space to do so. And we always say it's the quote-unquote good time to talk about it.
Yep. Yep.
And we love it. It's so, so, so good.
So good. And we love
Thank you guys.
We love the question that you guys added with, you know, the dream, the vision, you know, what's the God's because at this point, you know, we were coming out of, you know, survival mode, to be honest. And so it was, the dream was health. I
mean,
health, you know, everybody's alive. That's good. You know, and so it's forced us, you know, with that to dream again, you know, to really like, hey, what is something God's stirring? What is something? Mm-hmm. And I think to keep that on the forefront is such a gift to folks. So I'm really glad you guys added that.
Back to Chris's point, journey forward.
Yeah, exactly. And okay, so Jamie, you've mentioned this a couple times, and I think, you know, this, you don't need to, obviously this is like a big thing and we maybe don't have too much time to dive into it too intensely, but I think just going through what you guys have gone through with a child fighting cancer, like that is something that I just, you know, heartbreaking, you know, I just cannot imagine. And I know there's probably some people listening who are going through some similar, very heartbreaking, you know, a child fighting a disease or some other kind of sickness or a spouse maybe. What would be your biggest encouragement to someone, you know, a married couple that is going through that with a child or maybe with a parent or maybe with each other, just heartbreaking health issues? And I know, Jamie, you're so passionate about health and wellness now. Just what encouragement, maybe practical or just, you know, helpful encouragement can you give to people in that season?
Yeah, I think, you know, as far as marriage goes, if you're married with a sick child, to understand that you're going to process it differently. And I think, you know, for Chris and I, going to counseling really helped us individually because we did process really differently. You know, Chris naturally is a problem solver, you know, fixer. You know, like my healing journey didn't really start until after like her, you know, she got her port out, which was like, you know, 3 or 4 months after chemo and surgeries and, you know, all of that. And so just my encouragement would be seek counseling, like professional, because one thing Chris learned when we were in the hospital, you know, I think it was the first week maybe we were up there.
Yeah.
So we're up at Dornbecker for 3 weeks. And this is, you know, he met with a counselor there at the hospital and he said, you need to throw all your communication, what you've learned, what you've done in the past out the window. You need to start over. This is day one. You've never been here before. You need to know that you need to over-communicate. You know, you can't rely on nonverbal cues with your spouse. You have to verbally communicate what you need, what you're feeling, what you're experiencing. And that was huge.
Wow. Yeah. That's
good.
So good. Yeah. You guys, I mean, I can't imagine. And well, praise the Lord that, you know, he's healthy and a miracle. Yeah, he is.
Well, we're kind of coming up on our time here.
Okay.
So we got a couple more questions for you guys. I kind of want to end, you know, the formal conversation here with just asking you guys a single question. And I know we discussed a ton, so if there's any more you have in the bank, now's the time to spend it. What is an encouragement you can give our readers and listeners that will inspire them to pursue a love story that is creative, intentional, and faithful? Mm-hmm. Ultimately, How does one pursue a love letter life?
I mean, I think the one thing that I would say is to, you know, I mean, hopefully they want it, you know, hopefully that's their desire, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And to, you know, to maybe take inventory and say, gosh, you know, do I want this? And am I willing to do whatever it takes to make it happen? And meaning it might mean they need to reorient some things in their life. It might mean they need to, you know, reprioritize some things, because there's a cost. And I would always say,
for sure,
there is a cost to marriage, and you can either invest in that cost on the front end, and it's still hard. Mm-hmm. There's still a price, there's still sacrifice, but man, it's a great investment. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to pay that cost. You're going to pay that price on the back end when, if things go sideways, or when things go sideways, if you're not willing to. So I would just say, what would it look like to inspire someone to live a love letter life? I would say, do you want it? You know, do you want to live a love letter life? And then I would say, lean into it and go for it. And it's going to look different for everybody. It's going to look absolutely different for everybody, because everyone's wired different. Everyone's created different. Right. Relationships are different. But I would say my inspiration would be, ask yourself the question, do you want it? And if you really want it, then begin to pursue steps. Take the next step towards it. Figure out the very next thing you can do and go do that. And then all of those little steps along the way will write the book, right? Mm-hmm. But take the next today. And that might mean a text, a phone call, you know, a conversation, a date. But take the very next step. That'd be my inspiration.
Super good. Amen. Super good.
So good.
So good. Yeah.
Okay, well, to wrap this up, you guys, we do this rapid fire question thing. We ask all of our guests three simple questions. So it is, I'll just preface all the questions for you. What's your morning routine? What's the best life hack you've ever discovered? And your rose and thorn from the week, which is basically just our way of saying what's your high and your low from the week. So morning routine, go.
Okay, morning routine is wake up before everyone, go downstairs, get some hot water. And then I go into my prayer closet, which is my awesome space where I spend time with Jesus. And then have ideally it's an hour time. Sometimes it's shorter. And then kids wake up and we start the day.
Nice.
My morning routine, wake up, get the kids ready for school. Jamie does breakfasts. I do lunches, drive our two kids to school who need rides. We do a little short little devotion together, kind of in the car on our way, read a little scripture. I pray for them, drop them off, go straight to the Beanery on 2nd and Washington in Corvallis, Oregon.
Yep.
Order my double-double Americano, sit down and just spend my first part of the day with Jesus in the guide to prayer. And then I head out into my day from there.
Nice.
Awesome. What time would you say you head out into the day?
Just 9:30. I don't have any meetings before 9 or 9:30, but typically 9:30 is my goal.
Yeah, that's nice. Good. Cool. All right.
Best life hack.
Life hack.
I know this is kind of, if you haven't thought about this beforehand, it's kind of a pop question, but
I mean, it's, oh my gosh. I feel like
anything that's helped you, it could be the silliest thing, it could be a serious thing, anything that's like helped you and you've gone like, wow, others need to know about this. For us, it's our handheld vacuum.
We say that in every
episode. We get spiders. We get spiders with that. We get webs with that. We get all the cereal ember drops with that.
It could be it doesn't need to be a silly life hack though. It could be like, you guys got rid of your TV or what, or not TV. I don't know. It could be anything.
Okay, I don't know why this came to my mind, but my one life hack would be, those plastic milk cartons. You know, like there are the plastic milk boxes that they have at stores. We've got 8 of those against the wall in our garage with hooks above it. And everyone has a different kind of milk box for their shoes. So you don't track stuff into the house.
LOL.
You just get, you know, you get into everyone enters through the garage, right? So you get it on your car or your shoe in the carton. That's your carton. Hang your backpack and your jacket on the hook that's above your carton. So it's cheap. I mean, it costs no money. Gosh. And then you walk.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's my hat.
Okay. That's exactly what we're looking for, Chris.
That's a Chris thing. That's
I've got about a million of those. We can do a podcast on my hack sometimes.
That, yeah, there we go.
Organizational slight OCD habits.
Yes, exactly.
Jeremy can relate.
All right. Jamie, do you have one?
No, the first thing that comes to is just pray more, you know, like, you know, choose joy. That's my life hack. Like, life is hard, you know, you have it hard things every day, but we get to choose. We have the power to choose. So choose joy and pray.
Amen to that.
Her hacks are spiritual.
Yeah.
So much more godly than you, Chris. Yeah. Just so much more
shoes.
There we go. I'm about shoes. It's funny. All right. So roses and thorns for the week. We can skim through these. What's kind of been a thorn for you guys this week? Maybe collectively, just, you know, it's a way to get to know you guys a little bit more.
A thorn was literally I lost my voice yesterday. What the heck? I'm like, podcast tomorrow.
Oh,
no.
What about you?
My rose and thorn are the same. So do you want to do your rose first?
My rose is we got asked to be godparents from some sweet friends. And that's such a privilege and a joy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
My rose and thorn, it's the same. And so my rose is our son's turning 18 and he's graduating and heading off to college. It's just fun reflecting on firstborn and, you know, just the journey that's been. Rose, but then thorn at the same time. There was a moment this morning where I was heading into, you know, my time at the Beanery. He was heading out to do this a work thing. And we were both kind of heading out at the same time. And we hit this spot in Corvallis where our cars were side by side. And I kind of pulled up alongside him to kind of say hi as we were driving. And he looked over at me and kind of, you know, gave a wave. And then he took the exit and I went straight. And I thought, that's kind of where we're at right now, you know, in our lives. Huh. He is, you know, heading off to the next adventure, the next journey.
Wow.
Chris, he
left and I wept in my car for a solid 3 minutes this morning.
I didn't even know that.
I know. I hadn't told you yet. So.
Oh, no.
So that was, I mean, so it's good. It's rose and thorn, you know, it's all.
Yeah, right.
I just got emotional on
I got chills.
He drove off. So
that's too powerful of a visual.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Dang. All right, guys. Well, this has been such a pleasure and joy and honor. And we love you guys so much, as you know. And I know everyone listening is just going to be so impacted by this and challenged by everything you've had to say. So
is there anywhere people can find you? Anything you guys are doing right now where you'd want to send some folks?
I'm just on Instagram, Everyday Herbs.
That's right.
Yep.
Everyday Herbs.
I'm not on social media, so.
No social media for Chris.
Go Chris.
I'm one of those
people.
The only
way you can find Chris Herb is on Behind the Scenes Podcast.
That's right. That's right.
Or at the Beanery
come
in Corvallis.
My house. Let's go for a walk. Let's be together.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
I love you guys.
Cool. So Everyday Herbs on Instagram. Keep up with their family. All right. Well, let's do this again, you guys.
Yes, we'd love it.
Yes.
We appreciate you guys. Thanks for being on.
Love you guys.
Love you guys.
All right. Well, that was our conversation with Chris and Jamie Herb. We just love them and we learn a lot from them. We hope you guys learned something from them as well. As I said at the beginning, give us your takeaways. Let us know what your takeaways were at Behind the Scenes Podcast on Instagram. And our book has been out for just about a week now. So if you have not yet, go grab a copy. It's available anywhere books are sold. And if you finish reading it, leave a review. Super.
Let us know what you think or any questions that you guys have about the book so we can address them in the podcast.
Yep. All right, you guys, we will talk to you in a couple days.